NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days. 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
This is the Mike Rosen Show.
Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter. If somebody.
Mike Rosen.
You got to see it all.
On News Radio 850 KOA.
Okay, let me hit the ground running today. Thanks to Tom for sending me this morning. Lone Ranger and Tonto walk into a saloon. They sit down to drink a beer. After a few minutes, a big, tall cowboy walks in and says, "Who owns the big white horse outside?" Lone Ranger stood up, hitched his gun belt, and said, "I do. Why?" Cowboy looked at the Lone Ranger and said, "I just thought you'd like to know that your horse is about dead outside." Well, the Lone Ranger and Tonto rush outside. Sure enough, Silver was ready to die from heat exhaustion, so the Lone Ranger got Silver some water. Soon, Silver was starting to feel a little better. At which point, the Lone Ranger turns to Tonto and says, "Tonto, I want you to run around Silver and see if you can create enough of a breeze to make him start to feel better, cool him down a little bit." Tonto says, "Sure, Kemosabe." And he takes off running circles around Silver. Well, Lone Ranger's not able to do anything but wait, so he goes back to the saloon to finish his drink. A few minutes later, another cowboy struts into the bar and asks, "Who owns the big white horse outside?" Lone Ranger stands again and claims, "I do. What's wrong with him this time?" The cowboy looks the Lone Ranger in the eye and says, "Nothing, but you just left your engine running." All right, okay, I'm not proud of that one, but what can you do? On my webpage this morning, if you thought that was funny or didn't, just go to 850KOA.com and then find your way to my page. Start by putting your cursor on the on-air tab at the top, and then the drop-down boxes will offer you all the shows. Click on the Rosen Show. When you get to my pages, scroll down a little bit. There's a table of contents on the left-hand side. Click on Rosen Files, and then right at the top, there'll be a link to a video. We're calling that the Elephant Ate My Cell Phone or something like that. Now, it's in Chinese with no subtitles because there are students at some kind of a zoo, and they're taking pictures of this elephant, one of the young female Chinese students is taking pictures of this elephant, and the elephant grabs her cell phone, all right? I won't tell you any more than that. You need to watch. It's only about a minute and a half video, but it is worth the trouble. Trust me, you'll enjoy this. Okay. Well, Judge Robert McGehee, considering a lawsuit brought by the Libertarian Party, this is regarding the recall elections. It affects both of them. John Morris in Colorado Springs and Angela Giron in Pueblo, both state senators who are being recalled. The judge ruled that a provision of the state constitution that apparently applies only to recall elections says that you have until 15 days prior to the election to turn in enough signatures to get your candidate's name on the ballot. And the lawsuit brought by the Libertarians said that instead they were given only 10 days after the governor set the election date, and the Libertarians weren't able to get their signatures in by then. It's a little confusing since the Constitution conflicts with election reform legislation passed in the last session. And that now it all lands back in Secretary of State Scott Gessler's lap, since the Secretary of State is responsible for elections in the state. So where do we go from here? And one complicating factor is mail-in ballots have already been sent out, and people in the military who sent in their ballots, those ballots will not be able to be used because they won't include all the candidates. I have no idea how they're going to break this logjam, but we thought we'd have Scott Gessler on to have him explain the details and tell us where we go from here. Scott, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So I gave a brief summary. Put some more details on it.
Well, your summary is pretty accurate. And, you know, we had tried to harmonize the statute and the Constitution. Ironically, I was very much against the legislation that went through last year, but found myself in the position where I had to defend it. So we are having the election September 10th, regardless, of course. You know, my commitment is to make this election work. I will say with respect to our overseas, our military voters, a lot of those folks get ballots electronically. We'll send them electronically, and then they have to mail them back.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say that those ballots won't count, that they've already gotten. You know, we're looking at a couple different options, and one of the options may be to send them a second ballot. And if we receive the first one back, we'll sequester that. If the second ballot comes back, we'll count that instead. If not, we'll still count the first ballot. We may do that. I don't know for sure. We have to figure this stuff out probably within the next few days.
Won't the libertarians complain that those military voters didn't have an opportunity to vote for the libertarian because he wasn't on the original ballot?
Well, they may have some complaints, but we're going to work our best to make sure that if there's a libertarian on the ballot, that every voter, including our overseas and military voters, will have the opportunity to vote for that that libertarian candidate, if that candidate's on the ballot. So we're going to do whatever we need to make sure there's that option, but we also want to make sure that, you know, we're not going to disenfranchise our military voters. That's pretty important to me.
Well, how about the conflict between what the state constitution says that apparently applies only to recall elections and what was in the new legislation passed this year?
Well, I mean, the judge held that it was a conflict. You know, we can try to harmonize it, but it is what it is. So our approach is, you know, we've got to make things work. Now, the fact of the matter is it has a lot of cascading consequences. For example, you know, mail ballot elections, it pretty much makes it almost impossible to carry out a mail ballot election. We're going to have to shorten if we have early voting at all. So we're going to have to deal with that. If there's a protest, if someone submits their petition 15 days before the election and we review it and then there's a protest, we're going to have accelerated timelines on how to resolve that protest because we have to get it resolved so we can print ballots to have the election on September 10th. So there's a lot of sort of knock-on effects that follow this decision. The judge was quite aware of that, and the judge very explicitly, because we asked him, said that he would give the, you know, Secretary of State the authority to make this election work, and that's what we're going to do. So what we're planning on doing is basically coming out with a whole timeline. We're going to publish it as soon as we can, allow people to provide input or any objections like that. If we have to, we'll go back to court to get that squared away. But we need certainty, and we need certainty very soon, and so we're working furiously to make sure that happens.
The people that pushed these election reform measures through the state legislature, were they not aware of the conflict in the Constitution in this area?
My sense is they were not aware of it. You know, I can blame the folks who passed this particular piece of legislation, and, you know, I mean, they deserve some responsibility, but the fact of the matter is there's a lot of, and oftentimes there are conflicts in the election law, and that's sometimes why it makes our job a little bit tough to try and resolve all that stuff.
Now, Mark Gruskin was the election law attorney. We hear his name a lot in all kinds of election lawsuits. He was representing the groups trying to keep Morse and Huron in office, and he urged the judge to throw the case out on the grounds it was brought disingenuously by the two candidates who didn't execute their rights when they had a chance to. Apparently, the judge didn't find that persuasive.
That's right. So the most ironic thing is that Mark Gruskin and his clients were actually on the same side we were in trying to, you know, follow the statutory framework. You know, we didn't make the argument that they were disingenuous or anything along those lines, and he, of course, is welcome to do that. But, you know, we sort of focused on the statutory framework and what this all meant. So, you know, actually, as an attorney before I became Secretary of State, I've probably had 20 cases against Mr. Gruskin. He's a good attorney, and he makes the arguments for his client, and I'd have to respect that.
Maybe you can clarify something for me. This came up the other day when we were talking about this. The way these recall election works, voters are faced with two things to vote on. Number one, should the incumbent be removed from office, be recalled. And if a majority says, no, he should not be removed from office, then the votes that are cast at the same time for other candidates aren't even counted because they don't matter. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. In this case, then, do I understand that in Colorado Springs, John Morse, the incumbent senator, is not on that provisional ballot in case the voters decide a recall is appropriate?
That's correct. The candidate who is being recalled, or I should say the candidate who's facing the recall election, is not on the ballot for the replacement. And because that would seem a little bit silly if a candidate gets recalled and then somehow gets replaced. So the candidate that's getting recalled, John Morris or Angela Nerone, they are on the recall ballot, and that's it. It's up or down, thumbs up or thumbs down for them. If it's thumbs down, otherwise the voters say they need to be recalled, then we go to the second step, which occurs at the same time. The second step is who is the person who will replace that senator in this case.
Okay, so the incumbent being recalled is not even allowed to have his name on the provisional ballot.
That's right.
Okay, for reasons you just explained. And is there then a Democrat on the ballot in Colorado Springs?
Currently, my belief is no. I don't think there is. I haven't been following it, the political dynamics, all that closely. But I don't think there is. And, there could be one, though.
Now there might be enough time to get one in because of this lawsuit.
That's right.
Okay. Otherwise, if there's no Democrat, then it would be just a Republican and theoretically a Libertarian if they can get enough names on a petition.
I think that's correct. Now, there always could be a second Republican. You never know.
Right.
So it's...
Wouldn't be wise of the Republicans to do that strategically because they'd be splitting their votes in that kind of an arrangement. A Libertarian who otherwise wouldn't have a chance of winning could actually win.
That's correct. And, we have to recognize that there have been times in the past where Republicans have split votes. Let me put it that way. So there's always that chance.
Interesting. And this isn't in your province. I'm just thinking of the possibilities. So Democrats who don't want to vote for a Republican could wind up voting for a Libertarian, even though otherwise they wouldn't.
Yeah. I'll tell you something. This recall election, there have been more twists and turns than I would have ever expected. It's anything but straightforward. But, it's all going to be resolved. Well, I hope all will be resolved on September 10th. But you never know what's going to happen. They're interesting dynamics.
Okay. Thanks for that update, Scott. We'll check with you again if any other questions arise.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Right back on 850 KOA, 713-8585, our telephone number.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days. 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
All right. California's Governor Jerry Brown has just signed a controversial bill into law, allowing the state's transgender public school students to choose which bathrooms they use, which locker rooms they want to use, which showers they want to use, and which sports they want to participate in, girls' or boys' sports. you can be sensitive to people's civil rights and the civil rights of even a tiny minority. And that transgendered people are, in fact, a tiny minority, which doesn't mean that they're not entitled to reasonable rights that don't violate someone else's rights. When I say a tiny minority, according to the Williams Institute at UCLA Law School, out of 315 million Americans, there are 700,000 transgendered people. Another way of saying that, if we only had 315,000 people in the country, the appropriate number, or the relative number, would be 700 transgendered people out of 315,000. I'm just removing the zeros. To put it in percentage terms, people who regard themselves as transgendered constitute 0.2% of the entire population. And in advancing their rights and prerogatives, or at least what they claim their rights are, they're trampling on the rights of the other 99.8% of American children, whose parents believe they also have a right of gender privacy in their bathrooms. Karen England is executive director of the Capital Resource Institute in California, and she said this law forces San Francisco values on all California schools. It's a radical idea. She said you're going to have first-grade boys going to the bathroom next to a first-grade girl without any supervision. She said it would also allow students to participate in sports activities based on that student's assertion that he or she identifies as having a different private sense of his or her own gender, regardless of their biological gender at birth. So if you have some boy that can't get on the middle school basketball team, he might simply say, well, I imagine myself to be a girl, and I'm better than all of the other girls on the girls' team, so I want to play on the girls' team, and I want to try out to do that. It's bad enough to use the same bathroom. Let's say a boy who declares himself to be a girl walks into the girls' bathroom in a sixth-grade class or a sixth-grade school, or he's a sixth grader in a grade school. At least they don't have urinals in the girls' bathroom. They have stalls, so there's still some degree of privacy. But if the same openness applies to locker rooms in which there are showers, he's going to be showering with the girls, vice versa. A girl might be showering with the boys. Knowing boys, I don't think the boys would mind. But I suspect girls would mind if some boy who's anatomically a boy, who regards himself as a girl, wanted to shower with the girls. And I suspect the parents would mind as well. Now, supporting this radical piece of legislation, if you regard it as radical, I do. Common sense. I mean, this flunks the common sense test, this new law in California. San Francisco Assemblyman Tom Amiano is defending this. Why? He said, because no student can learn if they feel they have to hide who they are in school. Well, he can mouth those words, but of course a student can learn, even if that student is confused about his or her gender. Karen Englund, the aforementioned Karen Englund, who's opposed to this, said parents of students who feel uncomfortable with their daughter showering next to boys are being accused of being bigots. Now, if a girl doesn't want to shower with a boy, there's something wrong with her because she's bigoted. Discomfort is not an excuse for discrimination, responds Tom Amiano, who's sponsoring this. He's the San Francisco Assemblyman. What do you think about this? 713-8585, our telephone number. Coincidentally, it's a good time to break for our bottom of the hour news update, and I'll take your calls when we come back. 713-8585, the number.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days. 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net. Let's go to Mark and Parker, who had called in earlier to talk about the recall conundrum. Yes, Mark.
Well, before I address these idiot libertarians, you know, I want to address some reservations. I mean, I'm as reactionary. Some people say I'm chauvinistic and everything, but I still think having only males run for office is just, that's just wrong. I mean, maybe we could just prevent female Democrats from running. But, I mean, your Michelle Bachmans, I have no truck with that.
You're talking about a mail-only ballot, right, as in mail-ins?
Yeah, I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Very clever. Good point.
Okay. Well, anyway.
I caught that.
Right.
Okay, very good.
Well, I mean, that's something you should have done with Dave just to kick off the hour.
Actually, Mark, Dave and I have used that routine in the past years ago.
Well, not recently. But
no,
anyway,
not recently. Right. Okay.
Okay, so the reason we're in this conundrum with these recalls, we would not be having these recalls, or at least the one in Colorado Springs, if a stupid libertarian had gotten in there and stolen 3 or 4% of the vote and caused this that guy in Colorado Springs, anyway, to win by, what did he win by, a couple of hundred votes?
There were, I think, 27,000 votes in that Senate District 11 election when John Morris won. And out of the 27 or 28,000 votes cast, the libertarian got about 1,300. He got about 4 or 5%. So presumably, libertarians who wanted to vote were forced to be practical and choose between the lesser of evils, they would have picked the Republican rather than the Democrat.
Right. And wasn't the majority narrow enough in the Senate that if we had one or two votes, they wouldn't have passed?
No, that seat wouldn't have made the difference.
Okay.
It's more than a one-vote spread.
Well, I wonder
right now
if there are other seats in the House and the Senate at large that Libertarians took enough.
Yeah, not enough in this election probably to have made a difference. But your point's well taken. Here's the problem. And, I mean, I know enough Libertarians. They're not stupid. They just are self-indulgent. And
John Caldera, you know, he's borderline, but go ahead.
Well, but Caldera is by and large a Republican, and he votes for Republicans. But the kind of Libertarians we're talking about, the capital L Libertarians, and I like that distinction, uppercase capital L Libertarians, that's the Libertarian Party, as opposed to lowercase people with some Libertarian principles. And I have some principles. But the Libertarian Party is a discussion group masquerading as a political party. They have no chance of winning statewide elections, and even rarely do they even win local elections. But they don't care about election outcomes. They don't mind being spoilers. They say a plague on both your houses, Republicans and Democrats.
It's a vanity thing for them.
Yes, it is. Yeah,
they're
primping.
And moral vanity.
They're strutting, right.
Now, and here's the thing. I think they'd be much more effective if they would surreptitiously do what socialists do and run as a mainstream Democrat. And what they ought to do is infiltrate the Republican Party to the extent that they can go in very conservative districts like Douglas County and Arapahoe County and El Paso County and elect really conservatively fiscally conservative Republicans. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm really disappointed. I know you love Mike Kaufman. He's a great guy. Served his country. And he's done I wouldn't say he's done yeoman's work in Congress. He's just kind of been a place sitter. And we need someone that'll go in there. He's from, he was from a relatively safe district. He's not anymore. But when he was, he wasn't the kind of guy that was going to go stir things up. For instance, I would expect a guy like Cory Gardner, who represents me, or Mike Kaufman, when he did, to sponsor legislation to bring back the 100-watt light bulb. I don't understand Republicans' either reticence or ignorance or stupidity in not understanding the importance of symbolism in stirring up their base. Because it's those little issues like the 100-watt light bulb, or when I went to buy a washing machine 2 weeks ago, they're phasing out the old good washing machine. I'm on a well. I don't need to conserve water. And so you had to buy this new washing machine that doesn't have a center, whatever you call that thing.
We're digressing into minutiae here.
Right. But my point is, I think Libertarians would be more effective if they would infiltrate the Republican Party
And you've got some Libertarians who do play the game that way. Mike Lee in Utah, for example, who's an outspoken Libertarian, is a Republican. Amash is a Libertarian who's a Republican. These are the ones who are practical. The other ones just want to strut their purity. And
what do you think about Rand Paul? Do you think he's moderating and softening?
He's more
attractive.
No, I don't. His foreign policy positions, his defense positions, are just unacceptable to reasonable people. He's not as radical as his father, Ron Paul, but he's. I don't trust Libertarians on foreign policy. Sorry.
Right.
And when you pin Rand Paul down, if you really pin him down, or if you take a tape recorder when he's talking to a group of Libertarians, he will say things about existing government programs that will turn off one constituency after another. The sad reality is the vast, vast majority of Americans aren't up to the rugged individualism and rigor it takes to be a consistent Libertarian. They want too much from government.
Well, I'm going to close with something I've told you before. Yeah. That means we're doomed. We can't stop it.
Before I break, since I had thrown that topic out, what do you think about this new law in California regarding transgendered school students?
Here's what I can't understand. If ostensibly 30, 35, 40% of the electorate in California is supposed to be Hispanic, and we're told over and over that the Hispanic vote is culturally conservative, why do they have a two-thirds majority in the House and the Senate of Democrats that vote for this crap, and they elect a moonbeam like Jerry Brown?
Because those same Democrats vote for a lot of other things that the Hispanics
right.
want.
And this
is just one issue, and it's not enough to turn off all the Hispanics. And by the way, the younger Hispanics are far less culturally conservative than their parents are.
I was being facetious. I do not concede that Hispanics are culturally conservative. You just have to look how they live. They don't live conservatively. They have kids out of wedlock. They don't value education. They don't do any of the things that vault the poor into the middle class. And the middle class is how the Republicans are going to win.
I don't think that was the question I asked you. I asked you about the transgender law.
It's absolutely ridiculous, and I don't understand how any sane individual, because it will lead to absurdity. It's going to lead to, basically, it's making right, wrong, and black, white, because it's making people who don't want their daughters' privacy invaded upon bigots in the eyes of the elite. And that's... we're headed down a road culturally that I'm not sure we can pull out of.
All right. Thanks for your phone call. We'll have time to take some of your calls, and lines are wide open as we go into this break. What do you think about this new law in California? As one critic put it, it's forcing San Francisco values on all of the California schools. Seems to me that the vast majority of parents who have kids in California schools simply assume that bathroom and shower and locker room privacy based on your apparent gender is something that ought to be protected and not violated because 0.2% of the population is unclear as to their gender. 713-8585, the number, right back on 850 KOA.
NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate.
I've been telling you about my friends at American Financing for some time now. They're sponsoring this hour of my podcast. Work with salaried loan officers, get pre-approved in an hour, close in as fast as 8 days. 303-695-7000 or online at AmericanFinancing.net. The governor of North Carolina, Republican Pat McCrory, signed into law changes in how residents can vote. That includes requiring them to show a photo ID at polling stations. I think there are about 34 states that do that. Unfortunately, Colorado is not yet one of them. And the reason North Carolina was able to do this legislatively is because that recent Supreme Court decision finally recognizing that the 1960s era Voting Rights Act is no longer necessary, that the southern states that were under special scrutiny as a consequence of things that happened 50 years ago, are not in any way, shape, or form discriminating now. And as a consequence, North Carolina was on its own to pass this legislation. It also allows voters to cast a provisional ballot if they come to a polling station without proper ID. The people who are opposed to this play the race card game. They'll say that this is designed to suppress voter turnout, especially among blacks, the young, the elderly, and the poor. Actually, requiring a photo ID to vote is doing a favor to all of the people in those categories, because if they don't now have a photo ID, they are greatly restricting the kinds of things that they have to do in the normal course of activities. You can't function in this society today without a voter ID. The governor of this state notes that residents overwhelmingly support this. It's common sense. Boarding an airplane, purchasing Sudafed require voter IDs. How can you get along without a voter ID? This is just a game that the left plays, and the usual suspects are opposed to this. The groups include the NAACP that's opposed to it, and some of the ones that we talk about all the time. There's a one news story I'm reading about it, and it says the following. Critics, including Democrats and libertarians, suggest the true goal is to suppress voter turnout. Whoever wrote this story is equating the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, with libertarians in general. I certainly know enough libertarians who have no complaints whatsoever about requiring photo ID to vote. Those libertarians want to protect the legitimacy of their own vote, don't want to neutralize by somebody else who can cast a vote who isn't allowed to vote. And there's a big difference between the ACLU and libertarians in general. Among other things, the American Civil Liberties Union really doesn't give a damn about property rights, especially the right to the money you've earned. Their narrow focus on civil liberties is not the equivalent of Murray Rothbard and Milton Friedman and other prominent libertarians. I don't know what Rand Paul's position on photo ID is, but I can't believe that he'd be opposed to it. In any event, the calculus here, the political calculus by people on the left who oppose photo ID to vote when you have to use it in so many other places to cash a check to go through an airport, they simply calculate that people who will be voting illegally are much more likely to vote for Democrats than Republicans. So they're running the risk of losing some votes if we're a little more careful about making sure that someone casting a ballot is legally entitled to do so. Now, they'll never admit that, but make no mistake about it. When you take a look at the kind of voter fraud you see in places like Chicago, that voter fraud traditionally has been conducted by Democrats, rounding up people to vote illegally. And then they strut their stuff and say this is about voter suppression. That kind of Chicago voter fraud mentality not only doesn't want to suppress the vote, it wants people to vote more than once as long as they're voting for Democrats. When we come back, how to defraud Obamacare. We'll talk to a Duke researcher about this. He had a piece in the Weekly Standard, The User's Guide to Committing Fraud on the Obamacare Exchanges.